Well, good morning and welcome to Easter. Are you guys excited about Easter? For those of you who are with us for the first time, my name is Chris. I'm the lead pastor here at Hoboken Grace, and we are incredibly excited to celebrate Easter and to step into and to be able to take time today to reflect on how Easter speaks to those voices in all of our lives. Because all of us know what it is to find ourselves lying in bed late at night and those voices are just running through our head. And there seems to be just a replay or a loop of the mistakes that we've made or what we thought we were going to be able to do or to become. And I love how in that song, how Chris Martin, as Coldplay's bringing us that song, I love how he's talking about that conflict of these moments in life where we feel like we're on top of the world. It feels like we rule the world. It feels like we have the keys to everything, and it feels like we're on track, and we're finally going to be able to be what we were created to be. We're finally going to be able to do and to live the life that we were created to live, but then with just a moment that can flip. And in just a moment we can find ourselves replaying that loop and looking at how I blew it again. And I thought that was going to be the last time. And we're confronted. We're confronted with this reality that it seems sometimes that no matter how hard we try, we just can't get to where we know we should be. And what I want to do today is I want to talk to you about how Easter speaks to that. And to do so, I want to take you to what is my favorite Easter story. It's not actually the story of Easter. It's a story that follows shortly after Easter. But I think in this story, you find probably the clearest picture of what Easter is all about. And what God is doing and what God has accomplished through Easter. It's an exchange that takes place between Jesus and one of his followers. And as Jesus walks among us, he gathers to himself crowds of followers. But within this crowd, there are those who he spends more time with. There are 12 in particular that he spends a lot of time with. And inside of that 12, there are 3 in particular that he spends the most time with. And one of those is named Peter. And Peter is one of my favorite characters. If you've ever screwed up your life, you'll really love Peter as well. And so that basically means he connects to all of us. And I love Peter's whole story, but then there's one moment in particular where Jesus encounters Peter that I think just it explodes the meaning of Easter in his life and ours. I want to take you to the story. It's found in John chapter 21, and John is telling us the story. It begins in verse 1. It says this, Later, Jesus appeared again to the disciples beside the Sea of Galilee. This is how it happened. Several of the disciples were there, Simon Peter, Thomas, nicknamed the Twin, Nathanael from Cana in Galilee, the sons of Zebedee, and 2 other disciples. So he's talking about these disciples that are coming together, and all of these are part of that 12, that group that spent most of the time with Jesus. And at this point, they're a little bit confused about what's happening next, but they've stuck together and they're trying to figure out, okay, what do we do? As the story continues, it says, Simon Peter said, I'm going fishing. We'll come too, they all said. So they went out in a boat, but they caught nothing all night. Now, really quickly before we go on, I just want to make sure you're getting the picture right, because some of you right now are picturing like a leisurely fishing trip, and you're picturing a little rowboat and some guys out there with fishing rods, relaxed, enjoying the afternoon. That's not the picture here. These guys are professional fishermen. That's what their family trade was. That's what Jesus called them out of. They grew up fishing on huge boats, and they would go out with That's why it's talking about nets, not fishing poles. And they'd go out, and this was what they did for a living. And so they come together, and they're, what do we do now? Well, Peter says, listen, I'm just going to go back to fishing. So they go. It says they went out. They caught nothing all night. At dawn, Jesus was standing on the beach, but the disciples couldn't see who he was. So Jesus appears to him again. He comes to the edge of the lake, but they can't see him. They're far enough out where they can't recognize him. He called out, "Fellows, have you caught any fish?" "No," they replied. Then he said, "Throw out your net on the right-hand side of the boat and you'll get some." So they did, and they couldn't haul in the net because there were so many fish in it. Now, in this moment, Jesus is helping them, but he's also letting them know who he is. Because in a very subtle way, he's letting them know, listen, it's me, guys, because this has happened to them before. And if you read the story, you know that earlier Jesus encountered them fishing and said, hey, listen, the problem is your net's on the wrong side of the boat. And they laughed at him and said, we've been out here all night. It's ridiculous. How could it possibly be that our net is just on the wrong side of the boat? But they listen to him, they throw it on the other side, and they catch all this fish. So in this moment, someone comes to the edge of the lake and screams out into the lake, hey, listen, did you catch any fish? Which is never fun as a fisherman to say, no, we haven't. But they have to. And so they respond back, no, we haven't. He says, hey, throw it on the other side. And it doesn't seem that they immediately recognize it, but I think they this time, you see, they don't question. Because they're like, well, the last time somebody told us to do that, it worked out pretty well. So maybe it is the side of the boat that the net. But then they throw it out. And when they throw it out, it fills up with fish. And immediately they recognize who it is. It says, then the disciple Jesus loved, which is how John refers to himself when he's writing the book of John. He says, then the disciple Jesus loved said to Peter, it is the Lord. When Simon Peter heard that it was the Lord, he put on his tunic, for he had stripped for work. I don't think he was naked, okay? Don't let it freak you out. It's just his outer coat. He put it back on. He jumped into the water and headed to shore. The others stayed with the boat. And so Jesus, in this really subtle way, lets him know who it is. John's the first one to pick up on it. He says, oh, it's Jesus. Peter, and I love this about Peter, and don't miss this in the story. As a matter of fact, as I've been studying through it this time and preparing for today, it's overwhelming how Peter just has this incredible passion for Jesus. He just has this unbelievable passion for Jesus. And man, I hope that I have a passion for Jesus the way Peter does. Because when Peter finds out that it's Jesus, he doesn't wait a second. He's like, I'm not waiting for this boat to get in. I'm not waiting for it. And he jumps in the water and he takes off for shore. It's like that person, and almost all of us have people like this in our life. Maybe just one, but that person in your life where if they were to walk into this room today, you wouldn't wait for the service to end. You would immediately get up and go to the back because you just have to be near them. You have that passion for them. And Peter feels the same way. So John says, it's obviously Jesus. And Peter realizes Jesus. And he jumps out of a boat, which he loves to do. If you read through Peter's story, you know he has a tendency to jump out of boats. So he jumps out of this boat and he beelines for the shore, which the others, this is also an interesting part of the story. It says the others stayed with the boat and pulled the loaded net to shore, for they were only about 100 yards from shore. So I'm sure the others weren't super excited that Peter left them to do all the work, but he does. And so he goes ashore. They get the boat to shore. It says, when they got there, they found breakfast waiting for them, fish cooking over a charcoal fire and some bread. Bring some fish you've just caught, Jesus said. So Simon Peter went aboard and dragged the net to shore. There were 153 large fish, and yet the net hadn't torn. Now come and have some breakfast, Jesus said. None of the disciples dared to ask him, who are you? They knew it was the Lord. Then Jesus served them the bread and the fish. This was the third time Jesus had appeared to his disciples since he had been raised from the dead. And even in this passage, you can see there's this awkwardness there because they know it's him. But they're still like, how did this happen? And so they don't want to ask him again, is it really you? But there's still that tension, which I think is really, I think it's important for us to recognize, because sometimes we read through the scriptures and we think that the disciples were superhuman and that they didn't struggle with doubts and questions like we did. But you see, they're still struggling with it. They're like, okay, I see you come back from the dead, but I don't know what, and they're in this really weird phase. because they don't know what's going to happen next. And when Jesus died and came back, they realized that they completely missed the point, but they still don't know what the point is. So they realized, because they thought that he was going to overthrow the Roman Empire, they realized that's probably not the plan now, but we don't really know what the plan is. So, and they're just in the, they're in this state of the unknown and trying to figure this thing out. And as they're in this state, Jesus brings them together. They begin to eat together around this campfire. And then something really interesting happens. They're gathered together around this campfire. In verse 15, it says, after breakfast, Jesus asked Simon Peter, Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these? And he's talking about the fish. He says, do you love me more than this? Yes, Lord, Peter replied, you know I love you. Then feed my lambs, Jesus told him. Jesus repeated the question, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Yes, Lord, Peter said, you know I love you. Then take care of my sheep, Jesus said. A third time he asked him, Simon, son of John, do you love me? Peter was hurt that Jesus asked the question a third time. He said, Lord, you know everything. You know that I love you. Jesus said, then feed my sheep. So they don't really know what's happening. They don't really know how, but Jesus appears to him again. He brings him back around this fire. They're eating breakfast together. And then as breakfast is just about to wrap up, he begins to have a conversation with Peter. And he asks him a question. And it's important to note, as he asked him that third time, it says that Peter was hurt that he asked the question a third time. You need to know the context of the story in order to understand why Peter was hurt. You see, early on in Peter's journey with Jesus, Jesus had said something astounding to Peter. He had said something to Peter that was immeasurably incredible. Because as Peter was interacting with Jesus early on in his journey, Jesus was talking to his disciples, and he asked his disciples, who do people say that I am? And his disciples say, some say that you're John the Baptist come back from the dead. And another disciple said, well, maybe some people say that you're Elijah. And he says, well, who do you think that I am? And Peter speaks up. And in this moment, Peter says, you're the Messiah. And then Jesus says something amazing to Peter. Listen to what he says. It's found in Matthew chapter 16, verse 18. This is Jesus speaking to Peter. He says, now I say to you that you are Peter, which means rock. And upon this rock, I will build my church, and all the powers of hell will not conquer it. Peter says, I believe you're the Messiah. And Jesus says, Peter, you're right. But it doesn't stop there. He continues. He says, and I'm about to change your name, because he used to be called Simon. He said, but you're not going to be called Simon anymore. You're going to be called Peter, which means rock. And on this rock, in other words, I'm going to use you to build my church. And nothing is going to be able to conquer it. Nothing is going to be able to defeat it. Nothing is going to be able to come against it. You're going to become a rock. This picture of something that's immovable, this picture of something that's consistent and solid. I actually wanted to get in order to illustrate this, I wanted to be able to get a big rock. And so I called a rock quarry and I asked them if I could get a rock that would be 2 foot by 2 foot by 4 foot, just to capture the picture. And they said, do you know how much that weighs? I said, I'm sure it's heavy. He said, that weighs 3,000 pounds. I said, I've got a lot of people. We can lift it. Turns out you have to be able to get a forklift wherever you want to move that rock. So try to picture it in your mind. And Jesus says, and just for a moment, I want for you to imagine yourself being in that conversation with Jesus. I want for you to just imagine for a moment that Jesus at this point, Jesus is healing people. He is, the world is turning upside down because of how much power he has. And Peter knows. He knows you're the Son of God. You imagine being in that conversation and Jesus looks at you and says, you're going to be the rock. Can you imagine how that felt? It's like, man. Wow. And what an honor and what a privilege. And I think this is one of the reasons why you constantly see Peter stepping up when other people don't. And sometimes he does it in good ways, and sometimes he doesn't do it all that well, and he says things that he shouldn't say. Like when Jesus says, I'm going to die, and Peter pulls Jesus aside, and it's like, Jesus, you're kind of getting this wrong. I don't think you're supposed to die. Maybe you need to rethink it. Talk to the Father again, because that's not the way it's supposed to work out. And sometimes he goes so far as to question Jesus himself, but then also it's these other times where he steps up, and Jesus says, listen, you're all going to abandon me. And Peter says, no way. If you die, I die. Because Peter, he knew, I'm supposed to be the rock. These other guys, they can get flaky, they can whatever, but I'm supposed to be the rock. I'm supposed to be the one who's consistent. I'm supposed to be the one who's strong. I'm supposed to be the one who fights when no one else will fight. Jesus said, that's who I'm going to be. So that's who I've got to try to be. I also imagine knowing Peter and seeing how Peter acts, it probably got to his head a little bit, maybe just a touch. I could definitely see Peter showing up the next day with t-shirts for the rest of the disciples that just say, I'm with the rock. Someone mistakenly calls him Simon. No. It's Peter. It's Peter, which means rock, in case you don't know. And it's also interesting, the setting here, because you see, like, Peter around a campfire cooking. It's like, gives kind of a literal interpretation to, can you smell what the rock's cooking? And some of you get that, some of you don't. That's okay. But Jesus steps into Peter's life, and he gives him this incredible promise, or he calls him to this incredible reality that this is who you're going to be. And I'm going to do this amazing thing through you. I'm going to do something through you that hell itself cannot stand against. And I've got to believe from that moment on, Peter lived with that dream. Man, this is, I get to be a part of something significant. But then something happened. But then something happened. Because you see, when Jesus was arrested, most of the disciples, they just fled. But Peter decided that he was going to follow behind those who had arrested Jesus. And so he follows at a safe distance. He actually comes to the courtyard where they're questioning Jesus, and where he's being put on trial, and where they're beginning to abuse him. And as he's in that courtyard, there are three different times where people come up to him and ask him, wait a second, I thought I saw you with Jesus once. Weren't you with Jesus? Weren't you one of the ones who was actually close to Jesus? And at first he's just like, no, that's not me. You must have got me mistaken for somebody else. There's a lot of us. We look alike. And it must be someone else. And they said, no. Then there's another person. Says, no. I'm almost positive. As a matter of fact, one of the people is actually a little slave girl who's like, I'm almost positive I saw you with him. And it gets to the point where the last time it says that Peter curses. It says, I don't know him. I don't have anything to do with him. I don't want anything to do with him. And many of us have heard how Peter denied Christ, but one of the pieces of that story that we forget, or that we leave off, is what happens at the moment that third time, says, I don't know him, I don't want anything to do with him. The story says that when Jesus denies Christ the third time, that Jesus turns and looks at Peter, and that their eyes connect. And it says at that moment, Peter realized that he had done what Christ had actually told him that he was going to do, that you're going to deny me three times. But not only does he realize that he had walked away from the person who loved him most, but he realizes that Jesus knows. And I think when Peter left that courtyard that night, Peter walked out of that courtyard and said to himself, "It's over. It's over." That dream of being the rock, that dream, it's over. I was supposed to be the one who was strong. I was supposed to be the one who was consistent. I was supposed to be the one who was immovable. When everyone else ran away, I was supposed to be the rock. I was supposed to be the one who stood firm. But that night, Peter had to confront the reality that rather than looking like a rock, rather than being strong and consistent and solid and immovable, the truth is that he could probably be better pictured by a pile of sand. I mean, he cowers at the question of a little girl. What kind of rock is that? Who builds anything on someone who can't even stand up at the moment at which you need to stand up the most? Who builds anything on someone who abandons his friend when he needed him the most? And in that moment and in that courtyard, they were calling all sorts of witnesses to the mistakes that Jesus had made. And no one was willing to stand up and stand up for who Jesus was and what Jesus had really done. And Peter was there and he had the chance and he didn't. So much for the rock. Which is why I think John, when he's telling us the story, he says that they're gathered together, and Peter's the one who raises his hand and says, I'm just going to go back fishing. Because I think at this point for Peter, the reality was that, listen, Jesus may have a plan for you guys, and you guys may still be part of this thing, and you may still be part of what Jesus is going to do. We don't really know what it's going to look like. I'm sure he's still got a plan for you guys, but for me, let's be honest, I should just go back fishing. I should just go back fishing. It wasn't that Peter wasn't still passionate about Jesus. It's just that when he looked at his failures and he looked at what the dream was supposed to be, he had to confront the reality that there's no way that I can still be part of this plan. Which is why it was really awkward around that campfire when Jesus started asking questions. Just imagine with me for a moment that you're sitting around that campfire. And the disciples knew what had happened with Peter. They knew that Jesus had predicted it, and they knew that it had happened. And so they're sitting around that campfire, and everything's great. And we're together again, and Jesus is here again, and this is exciting. But then all of a sudden, as things are wrapping up, Jesus speaks over the fire. Hey, Simon. Notice he doesn't use the name Peter. He uses his old name. He says, hey, Simon. Do you love me? And I can imagine at that point, like everyone's eating, man, this is great. And all of a sudden, Jesus asked the question, and the forks just stop. Uh-oh. Simon, you love me? Yes, I love you. And feed my sheep. Okay, that's over. Good. Okay, let's just keep going. Act normal. Simon, do you love me? Oh, why do you ask twice? Why do you ask twice? People are starting to slowly move away from the campfire. This is kind of a personal conversation. It's just going to be over here. Yes, Lord, I love you. Feed my sheep. And I know for all of the people who are gathered around there, they're just thinking to themselves, please don't say it a third time. 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 Simon, do you love me? And at this point, I think even the fish's eyes probably just turned like, ooh, it got real. It says Peter's hurt. Because if there was any question about what they were talking about before, that question is gone. Now we know what we're talking about. And I think for Peter, he probably expected that this would be the moment. He probably expected that this would be the moment where Jesus says, if you really loved me, then why'd you abandon me? Hey, Simon, that's not what love looks like. Peter says, Jesus, you know everything. He says you know everything because he's alluding to the fact that, Jesus, you know what happened. You and I, we both know what happened. We know what happened. You know everything. He says, but you also know I love you. And I think everyone is sitting there in this tension that you could cut with a knife, and it's thick. And they're sitting in that tension and waiting to see what is Jesus going to do, and how is Jesus going to discipline him, or how is Jesus going to chastise him, or how is Jesus... But when we most expected condemnation, Jesus says, then you feed my sheep. And in this moment, in a very subtle, gentle, loving, beautiful way, Jesus says to Simon, don't you for one second think I've given up on you. Don't you for one second think I've given up on you. And don't you for one second think that the dream that I gave you before is not going to become a reality. But you see, this is an Easter story. You see, the whole time since Peter had heard that he was going to be the rock, he thought that he had to turn himself into the rock. He thought that he had to, through discipline and willpower, he had to become the rock. But here's the reality, guys. No matter how hard you try ourselves into the rock, And no matter how hard you try, and some of you are living your life that way, and you've looked at who God has called you to be, or you look at who you want to be as a husband, or you look at who you want to be as a father, or you look at who you want to be as a friend or a coworker, or you look at who you want to be in this world and the impact and the significance that you want to have and how you want to be a significant part of his story, and you look at the dreams that Jesus gives us about who we were created to be, and you look at those things and you're trying and trying and trying and trying and trying to make yourself into that. But when you do that, you confront the reality that all of us confront, that no matter how hard we try, no matter how hard we strive, no matter how much we pour into it, all of us will fall short. All of us will fail. And for some of you, in the midst of that failure, you think that God has walked away from you. You think that Jesus, as he confronts that failure, has given up on you. But the beauty of Easter is this, and what Jesus is allowing Peter to see is that, Peter, what you don't understand is that the cross was all about this moment. The reason that I had to die, Peter, is that I was going to take your betrayal, and I was going to take your denial, and I was going to take all of your weakness on me, and I was going to die in your place on that cross. So that rather than you trying to prove yourself to me, I was going to take all of the failure and all of the times that you've fallen short on myself, so that you could be forgiven of that. So that no matter how many times you fail, no matter how many times you fall short, that when we come to this campfire, you can know I will always be for you. And you are completely forgiven. And not only that, Peter, but I conquered death. And I conquered your failure. And I conquered sin. And I conquered the shame that goes with it. And I rose from that grave, and I'm going to do something in you. I'm going to bring you back to life, and I'm going to make you new. Peter, you're not going to become the rock because of you. You're going to become the rock because of me. And that day, Peter drowned in the grace of God. And all of his efforts and all of his work and will and all of that, it drowned in the grace of God, and it was nowhere to be seen. All that was left is what Jesus had done for him. And when you look at the story of Peter, you see a man who emerges from that moment a completely different person, but his confidence is never again found in his own strength. From that moment on, his confidence is found in the grace and forgiveness of God. That when I failed, he paid for it. The scriptures teach us that when we place our faith in Jesus, that we're not made right through God or right with God through keeping the law, but that we're made right with God by placing our faith in Jesus. When we accept his forgiveness for all of our failure and all of the times that we have fallen short of being who we were created to be and loving the way that we were created to love, the scriptures say that when we place our faith in Jesus, that he took all of that failure and shame and all of our brokenness and sin on him on that cross. We place our faith in Jesus, that he did that for us, that we are forgiven. But it also teaches us that just as Jesus rose from that grave, and when you place your faith in Jesus, he begins to make you new from the inside out. Philippians 1:6 says this. It says, "And I am certain that God, who began the good work within you, will continue his work until the day it is finally finished when Christ Jesus returns. This reality, and I believe what Jesus is speaking into Peter's life in this moment is this: Peter, I'm going to still make you into that rock, but it's not because of you. It's because of me. And he makes Peter new. And he continued that process until one day Peter stood before Jesus again. And that day it was complete. And Peter was the rock that he'd been created to be. Today I want to invite you to that fireside, to that campfire with Jesus. Some of you have been running from this conversation with Jesus because you think that when he confronts your failure, and make no mistake about it, he will not ignore it. He didn't ignore it for Peter. He's not going to ignore it for any of us. He does not ignore our failure. But when he confronts it, he does not confront it with condemnation. He confronts it with the cross. And he confronts it with the reality that you have been forgiven. He confronts it with the reality that you have been made new. He confronts it with the reality that it's not because of you, but because of him, that the dream that he has for you will one day be your reality. Don't run from the conversation with him. Engage it. Will you pray with me? Father, today as we talk through this, I pray for those who are here. And maybe they've been told their whole lives that the way to be made right with you is through the law, and them becoming the rock, and them being consistent, and them being immovable, and their willpower and their strength. Father, I pray today that the story of Peter, this story that so beautifully illustrates Easter, I pray that this story would break down those lies. And I pray that rather than us avoiding that conversation with you, rather than us running from that conversation with you, I pray for those who have not stepped into this relationship with you, that today they would come to you. That they'd bring with them their failures, all the ways in which we've fallen short. And that for the first time they would hear you speak forgiveness and grace into them. I pray that today they would drown in your grace. I pray that they would move forward from this moment. And for all of us, because even for those of us who've experienced it, it's so easy for us to fall back and finding confidence in who we are instead of what you're doing. Father, I pray for all of us that we would move forward from this moment confident. Not because of who we are, but because you gave your life on that cross and you walked out of that grave. And just as you told Peter, you are building your church in and through us, and nothing will ever stand against it. In Jesus' name. Amen.